Continuing on in our Bible study of man versus the Bible, we're looking tonight at man versus excuses. Now, excuses, everybody's got excuses, don't they? All right. Now, as somebody coming from the property management field, somebody who is raising children, I've heard a lot of excuses, and I feel like the excuses never stop. Why'd you do this? Well, because he did this, and then he did that, and, well, he took my toy, and that person over there, and then a bird came in. And there's always a story as to why something bad happened. But if you sit there and you take the same group of people, and you ask them, is there ever a good reason to do a bad thing? Everybody will say, no, there's never a good reason to do a bad thing. All right, then why did you hit your brother? Well, he took the toy that I had, and you kind of look at that and you go, huh. Right, I had somebody do this to me one time. I had called them, and they hadn't answered. They hadn't paid their rent in a while. And I hate to say this, but at a certain age, if you don't pay your rent, I kind of get the feeling that you died. And that's just, I won't tell you what taught me that lesson, but if you pay your rent, and then you don't pay your rent for 2 or 3 months, I'm going to get really nervous about coming over and knocking on your door. But I'd call her. She was actually not one of my good, I call my one of my good tenants that are paying all the time. She is somebody who was hit and miss all the time, right? Always had packages, always had the nice fancy car, never had money for the rent. And I learned a long time ago not to judge folks. I don't know what they're going through. I'm just not going to pick on it. But I called and she says, you know what? Why is it that you only ever call the black people concerning rent? And I go, oh. I go, well, ma'am, are you tapping my phone? I didn't say that. I said this. I said, well, ma'am, I only call the people who owe me rent. And at the time, the property I was at was 95% to 96% African American in population. Now, as far as fair housing goes, you're not supposed to know that number. But I know my folks. I love my folks. And I just know them, right? So I said, well, ma'am, I have a large percentage of people who look just like you here, and you're the only one who's not paying their rent this month. And I just, that was it. The excuse was, well, you're mean. That's why I didn't pay rent, because you're mean. Go, out of the 12 months you've been here, you've paid rent on time 3 times. Right? I had some people, they'd be there for the same amount of time. They may be paid rent for 6 months, depending on how things go. But there was always an excuse for it. And the most troubling ones for me were the ones whose mom or dad would die. Multiple times. You kind of get that phone call, hey, listen, Matt, I'm so sorry, I can't pay my rent. My mom died. Oh, I'm so very sorry. Well, I tell you what, when can you have it in? Next week, okay, perfect, I understand. And then they would catch up whenever they could, and they would pay. And a couple months later, they would forget that they used that excuse already, and they would use it again. And then a few months would go by, and mom would die again. Now, every now and then, dad would die, but it was always somebody's mom or grandma. And after a while, we kind of joke that in property management, you lose a chunk of your good sense. And you just kind of, yep, okay. And one time it almost slipped. Well, my brother died. I go, did you pay to have him bumped off? Where'd the money go? You lose your sensitivity a little bit because people use the same excuses over and over and over. And it's always the same person and it's always the same excuse. And you try to have a heart, but there's always an excuse. I had a cop friend one time and I was talking to them. And I like to ask weird questions when I find somebody with a really cool job. What is your weirdest traffic ticket excuse that you've ever had? You know, I'll talk to a doctor. What's the weirdest excuse that a patient has ever given you for whatever happened to them? And I'll kind of ask that because excuses, they're interesting, but they're seldom true. Right? Now, it's easy for me to pick on the global things, what we do when we're paying our bills and what we do when we're doing this or that. But the fact of the matter is there is no excuse in the Christian life to behave unchristianly. Right? Again, I'll go back to those folks that were paying rent. My response was always, and it took a little bit to get there, but it was always one of, well, okay. And I pray for their situation, whether I believed it or not. Give them the benefit of the doubt. And if you could get it in, I'll work with you. If you're just going to disappear, just at least give me the courtesy of handing me the keys so I know when I've got it back, and that's it. Never had to abuse anybody, never had to be verbally violent with anybody, never got the duct tape out to put nasty letters on their door. Just respect, right? Respect, mercy, compassion, and that was it. And if you did me wrong, that was it. But I learned this, that there's no excuse for me to be anything else. Well, they lied to me 9 times. All right, well, here's number 10. What are you going to do? You're going to be compassionate. Why? Because you know what? If they've not paid rent 9 times, I failed the Lord 1,000 times more than that. And he was merciful and compassionate and kind. Right? How about this one? Well, why is it that after sermon on that sin, you're still hanging around it? Well, you see, it's hard and this and that. No, stop making excuses. There are no excuses. God gave you all the knowledge that you need to put sin behind you. He gives you all the strength and all the support that you need to get those things behind you. You've got everything you need. I was talking to one of the insurance salesmen, and they said this, and it kind of bothered me a little bit. They asked about pastoral counseling coverage as far as the insurance goes. And he says, well, there's more people you'd have to talk to because we're not entirely sure that, you know, you're not taking on more than what you can handle, and you're not biting off more than you can chew, is what he said. Now listen, I'm confident in what I know. I'm confident in the classes that I took and what I did in college. I'm confident in that. But you know what? That's not what offended me. What offended me is this. It's not me. What you're saying isn't that you don't think I can handle it. He's questioning this book. Well, what if somebody's depressed? What if they're going to kill themselves? Well, you know what? My friend Job, he knew a lot about that. I think of many people in the Bible that struggled with that, and the lessons that the Lord taught them to get them through it, black and white. There's no guessing to that, right? I've known a lot of people on prescription medication, a lot of people who went to years of therapy and still felt no different than the day they first walked into one of those shops. I've known a lot of people that had messed up lives, had frustration after frustration in the things that they were doing. They were at the end of their proverbial rope. They finally plied the Word of God to their lives. All of a sudden, things got a whole lot easier, and they never went back to that life, and they're so much the happier. I've got a lot more people that are willing to say that the Bible and what God said to do helped them than people who sit there and pay the money to the modern therapist. There's a lot more people affected by the Bible than the guesswork of philosophy today. We evidently have no real excuse. No real excuse for not serving the Lord. We know that church membership is a participation activity. We know that we are commanded to teach, to preach, and to show in every action the Lord Jesus Christ. The people in this room, we're smart people. Right, I did that whole thing, how long have you been here in the church? Many of you have been here longer than I've been alive. You've been around the Bible for longer than I've been alive. You had that teaching. You've had great pastors, great teachers. You've traveled, you've visited, you've seen things, you've learned things. So the question becomes this, as we are all sinners still, why are you still struggling? It's a good question, isn't it? If I've got all the knowledge and everything I need, why am I still struggling? I have found that there are two reasons why children of God still struggle despite how strong they've been taught or how much they know. One of them is laziness. We just don't. Now, what comes out of that fleshly desire to just not participate or not make a change or not fix something that's going on in our lives? What comes from that? What does that produce? Excuses. I think it's the Kingsmen that sang that song, excuses, excuses, you hear them every day, the devil will supply them if from church you keep away. That's a good song. People come to know the Lord, the devil always loses, so to keep them folks away from church, he offers them excuses. Right? And I heard somebody say this one time and it tickled me. Soon it is going to be too hot to do what was just too cold to do last month. You know what? I'd participate, but that pastor, he sure is young. I'd participate, but that pastor sure is old. You know, I'd do this, but you know what? There's not a lot of people. There's not a lot of excitement. There's not a lot of energy. Or my personal favorite. Well, we used to. get that every church in America, every church in the world, every church since Jesus Christ left the earth, well, we used to have the greatest. We used to be the best. We used to. Well, what's happening now? Not much. As though the person responsible is gone. Right? And I said they're out from when the Lord left. Right? What did the first church do when the Lord rose from the earth? Had to send an angel down. Why stand ye gazing? Oh, well, you see it, and then go! He gave you orders. Go! Listen, excuses are a lazy man's attempt to getting something for nothing. To serve the Lord, to do anything of merit, one must only be willing to, one, count the cost, and two, excite themselves to pay it. Right? I mentioned the other thing. There's two things. One is laziness. It's that fleshly reaction to having to do anything different. The second one is ignorance. I don't say that in the mean way. I mean, literally, you do not know. Right? Now, we have all the opportunity in the world to learn what we don't know, so is that an excuse? It's not. Right? The only way we're giving an excuse is if we're responding in a fleshly way. Real merit comes from going, okay, this is what it's going to take to get that done in my life, or this is what it's going to take to get it done in church, this is what I've got to do it, and here I go. That's what it takes. Three recruiters were to address high school seniors. Each recruiter represented a branch of the military, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps. Well, the Army and the Navy guys, they got up and they talked for so long, they left just a sliver of time, 2 minutes, for the Marine Corps guy to get up there and make his case. Each one of them looking to get a certain amount of numbers. If you know how recruitership works, they need a certain amount of numbers to do a certain amount of calls. It's kind of like a sales gig. Well, they only left this guy, this poor Marine, 2 minutes. And he stood up in front of the class for half of his time, a whole 60 seconds staring at him. And he said this: I doubt whether there are two or three of you in this room who would even stand a chance in the Marine Corps. But I want to see those two or three immediately in the dining hall when we are dismissed. He turned smartly and he sat down, barely using 30 seconds. Now, what do you think happened in a crowd of people? You said, well, only two or three of you are going to be strong enough, a high schoolers. What's going to happen? Huge turnout. He gets into there, there's a whole bunch of people. And you know what gets us? You know what causes that kind of reaction? Because some of us get excited when we find out something's going to take some commitment. You ever do that? It's like, all right, listen, we've got this brand new thing going on. It's only going to take about 30 seconds. You know what? That's not going to, I found it, it's kind of counterintuitive. 30 seconds, there's not going to be people turn up for that. Hey, listen, we're going to go out here, we're going to build this. And you might not get the amount you need, but you'll get people who are excited about the size of the project. Right? I'll sit there sometimes, and when I was in school, they gave us a merit-based award system on reading. If you read X amount of pages, you get this many points. Well, I figured that one out real quick, Patrick, I did. You know what kind of books I went for? I didn't go for the cute little books. I got them big books. And I read through those things, and I got faster and faster at reading. I turned in those points. Everybody else would turn, they'd go to the school store, they would turn in their points, they would get pencils and erasers, and one person got a mug, they were so proud. I came back with a pencil, an eraser, a mug, and a sweater. Yeah! That was before hoodies were popular. I had one. I was very had the school's name on it and everything. There's something about a certain degree of difficulty that excites some people, and we need that in the Christian walk. We need people who look at the cost and go, all right, well, let me get my tools. You know what? Let me get my back brace on. Let's get the icy hot out. Whatever it is it's going to take to do this, I'm going to get it done. Whether I've got to knock on 100 doors, whether I've got to walk 100 miles, whether or not I've got to vacuum the entire floor with just a little tiny dirt devil, whatever it is, I'm going to do it. We don't care about what it costs. We're just excited to pay it. And that ought to be our desire. Because I'll tell you this, let's go ahead and actually get some Bible in our Wednesday night Bible study here. Chapter 13, verse 17. It says, and Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they are that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not. And be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rahab, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came into Hebron, where Ahimaiah, and there's a little bit of a list of different kinds of people there, but verse 23, and they came unto the brook of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. And the next verse would go on to say that they were so excited about this giant branch of grapes, this giant bunch of grapes, they named the river after it. That's a good cluster of grapes. Danielle pulled a head of lettuce out of the fridge today and it froze. You know what? We're not going to name anything after that head of lettuce. The particular Kroger that we bought it from, the refrigerator that froze the head of lettuce, we're not going to forget it. So if I'm going to name something after some grapes, that's going to be exciting. That better be an exciting bunch of grapes. The problem is with excuses and serving the Lord is that your reasoning will always get in the way. You look at what Moses commanded them. All right, look for these things. Tell me what this looks like. But be of good courage. You know what they did? They went over there. They took note of everything that it looked like. They took note of all the people. They even brought the fruits. But they forgot the be of good courage thing. They got over there and they started to see the size of everything. They began to count the cost of what this would take. None of the things that they were supposed to do. Now, if I read carefully, I see that Moses sent what in? Did he send accountants in? No, he didn't send accountants in, because the accountant will come back and tell you you can't do it, right? Did he send statisticians in? Statisticians? No, because the statistician will come back with some numbers, confuse you, and you go, well, maybe we shouldn't try. He sent spies in. Now, I don't know a lot about spies, but spies are pretty cool. They're who you send in so you can get the information, so you can infiltrate what's happening there. And that was the purpose, but they didn't act like spies. They acted like little chickens. And what we see here is that their survey was very much correct. Was the fruit what they said it was? We know it to be, because God promised that that's what it would be. They affirmed everything that God had said, but they paid too much attention to one very bad detail to answer a question that was never asked of them. And we do that all the time. We answer a question that's not asked of us. God says, do this. We ask the question, well, can it even be done? Right? Now there's a time for pragmatism, right? We were talking about the roof during the business meeting, and I tell you what, I hope you forgive me. I had fun during that business meeting. I hope you did too. And I know business meetings aren't necessarily supposed to be fun, but we got the business done. And you know what? Nobody got mad. And I call that a win for the first business meeting at a church. And there's a time for pragmatism. We can sit there and say, well, let's build the roof now. Let's look at the harness. And then there's some of us that kind of look at that and go, you know what? Let's wait till we get to this amount and then we'll push forward. That's not what they were doing here. They weren't being pragmatic. They were not being strategic. They were not thinking over how to do it. We thought how to do it. They're thinking, well, should we even bother? And that's never a question that should come out of the Lord telling us to do something. You're asking the wrong questions. I used to do that to my dad all the time, drove him nuts, and I thought, I got a kick out of it. Matt, go vacuum the floor. You want me to vacuum it or you want me to shampoo it? Why would I want you to shampoo it? Vacuum it. Vacuum it, and then if you want to shampoo it, you can shampoo it. The shampoo thing's broken, Dad. Do you want me to go to the store and get you another one? Just vacuum the floor, will you? Okay. Now, hey, Dad, do I go like this or do you want me to go like that? And after a while, inevitably, give me the vacuum cleaner. And in many ways, we're guilty of doing that to the Lord. You want me to give the gospel, Lord? I don't know. Maybe that person? I don't think so. That person? You want me to invite my friend to church? I heard somebody say this to one time. It broke my heart. Well, I can't bring my so-and-so to church because their hair, their makeup, their clothes, their whatever, right? I think in this particular case, it was tattoos. I couldn't bring them to church. And yeah, tattoos. Remember who's sitting right next to me while that lady was telling us that had tattoos all up his arm. And he goes, well, I tell you what happened. He was a Southern guy. He goes, I tell you what, I've had tattoos all my life. Never hurt me once walking through the church. Never hurt me the worst. He was funny like that, but I appreciate it. He had the right points. To me, that was the right point. Don't be embarrassed. Come in. Right? Don't be shocked. Well, I can't invite anybody because they're worldly. So was I before I came to church. Right? First the salvation, then we accept the teaching. And you know what? Sometimes we make decisions about ourselves that you just can't get rid of. Right? I knew somebody one time, they were saved, they had earrings. It was a man, had earrings, little like little spiky deals all up and down his ear. Now, when he took those out finally, they left holes all up and down his ear. And he was so conscientious about that. And he had long hair when he first started coming to church. He had the longest hair going all the way down his back. One time he came forward, and it was the day the Lord had saved him, and he came back for that Sunday night, and he came forward for baptism to tell the pastor he was saved. And right then and there, he had a pair of scissors in his pocket, which, by the way, if you ever come up for the altar, don't carry sharp implements. It scares preachers. He cut his own hair right there at the altar. Freaked everybody out. But he took those things. He was so conscientious about those things in his ears. And, you know, he's sitting there one time, he goes, I wonder if people take me seriously. I wonder if people. And I kind of put my hand over him and go, Charles, no one's looking at your face. And that was kind of my way of calling him ugly. I go, but no one's looking at your face, buddy. And we just kind of, because you know what? I was in that church for months. Nobody ever said anything, except for him. We make our excuses. Well, I can't invite so-and-so. You know what? So-and-so needs the Lord. Don't do that. Right? And listen, there's a time for healing. There's a time for getting those things right. But you know what? We can't use that as an excuse to not serve the Lord. Because the problem was the land was great. However, to them, the enemy was strong. And you know what? The enemy was strong. I can think of 1,000 reasons why becoming a pastor in the year 2020 or 2021 would have been a nightmare scenario. Can you? COVID, social justice, the current climate against religion, the way the government treats us, and the fact that we're not quite a business, but they want us to be. I can think of thousands of reasons why it's hard to be a church member during this time. But you know what? I can think of one really, really good reason why we ought to anyway. And that is the Lord Jesus Christ told us to. That's it. What about this? No, I got a good reason, and there's nothing you can say that's going to tear me from this reason to serve the Lord today. Well, you know what? People are going to get mad. People are going to throw stones. You might lose your eye, as my one guy did down in Cincinnati. All this might happen. Yeah, but God says go do it. Now listen, we look at this. This was a real concern for them, wasn't it? Now, we're not talking about, hey, cross this line. There were consequences for going into the land. In their heart, they knew they would have to go and fight these guys. Right? And it's easy. We joke around. We kind of insult each other a little bit. We pick on each other a little bit. But I tell you what, there's some of you I wouldn't pick a real fight with. That's just the truth. I joke about arm wrestling Brother Tim all the time. But if Brother Tim wanted my last, you know, pizza, he's going to get it. That's it. I joke with Charlie all the time, too. He tells, now, Pastor, go do this. And I'm like, all right, you're too big for me to argue with. Some of you I wouldn't pick a fight with. I wouldn't. These guys would actually have to go pick a fight with entrenched cities, civilizations that had been there for a while. This was not a small thing. Folks, when we stand up and serve the Lord, I'm not going to preach this message pretending that serving the Lord is easy peasy. Well, I take that back. If we do nothing but sit in our church and we amen everything that's ever said about a social justice issue, if we amen everything that's ever said about how God is good, and we never venture out, and we never personally go out and evangelize people, and we don't teach anybody here, and we don't stand for any doctrine, being a Christian will be relatively easy. As long as we don't rock the boat, it's going to be easy. But that's not what God called us to do. He called us to go through the obstacles, right? To go through the straight gate, right? Now, if we're looking at this, it's very easy for us to look at the enemy and say, I've got a valid excuse to not serve him, right? I think of some of the things that I've gotten up here and said, and I understand, but believe me on this, I understand that me preaching on the things that they preached on 50 years ago is different. I know that in the next 5 to 10 years, someone could get a hold of the recordings of what I've said from this pulpit and come after my kids. I know that. I know the risks of getting up behind this pulpit. I know the risks you take every time you give the gospel. I know what they are. However, God never told me to answer the question, can it be done? He just told me to go do it. You following me on this? It's not a matter of, well, you know, that preacher, he's been up there talking about Bible study since the first Sunday school class that he taught. You know what? I wish he'd stop talking about it. I'm not going to stop talking about it. Why? Because it's fundamental for your Christian structure. And how many excuses could we come up with that? Well, I was going to, but I was late for work. They called an early meeting. I had to work a 13-hour shift today. And by the time I got home, I was so dog tired. I had just enough time to pop a pizza pocket into the oven, get that back out, and go, you know, put myself to bed. But you know what? During that time, we checked our phone 700 times. We made 4 or 5 personal phone calls that lasted 20 minutes. We sat down and we caught the last couple of minutes of that late night comedy show. We had all the time for all of those things, but no time. We always point to the things that could have stopped anything. We never point to the things that shouldn't have even been there at all. Right? We always have a reason. You and I, we have the same amount of time as anybody who lived back when the Lord first started the church. Right? We have the same amount of time they did. The problem is we don't prioritize what we do. There can be no excuses. The size of the enemy has never been a valid excuse. It wasn't for the children of Israel. It wasn't for David, and it wasn't for anybody who ever fought against the Roman government. A safari hunter was startled by a loud screeching of a bird. When he caught sight of the bird, he saw it up in a tree, and it was running back and forth from its nest over to the side of the tree, to the nest of the side of the tree, making an awful racket. And the hunter took a while looking at it, trying to figure out what it was all bothered about. Well, a few minutes later, he saw this snake winding its way up the tree. And the bird was looking at that, looking at her babies, and just losing its mind. Now the hunter kind of sat there and he thought, well, I could either put the bird out of its misery, or I could get the snake out of the air with one shot. But deciding not to make any effort, he just kind of stopped, and eventually the mama bird flew away. And she came back with this leaf, with this odd-looking leaf, laid it over the eggs. The said babies. I'm not sure if it was the eggs or if it was the actual baby birds, but it doesn't matter. She laid it over the nest. And that snake, as it riled back to go ahead and get at one of the babies, saw that leaf and stopped. Sulked its way down the tree and took off. And the hunter was so distracted by that, when he later went back to the camp, he asked some of the natives, said, hey, listen, I saw this and this makes no sense to me whatsoever. And what the people there said is that the birds had figured out that there's a certain kind of leaf that the snake won't go to because it irritates their skin. So they've learned that if they put that over things, or that the snake can't go in there, so they can either build their nests in there or use the leaves to stop them from progressing through to go. That's pretty clever. And then I thought of this right here. You know, we think faith can be such a flimsy thing, right? I'll be going through a hard time. I'll say, listen, but I'm trusting in the Lord. And they'll look at me like I'm cuddling a teddy bear, just hoping that that'll protect me from the monster under my bed. That's not the case. When I invoke the name of my Lord, I'm invoking somebody mighty. And you know what? As I sat there, and no matter what danger I am, I apply the Lord's teachings to my problem, that old serpent goes off and takes its way out of here. Right, it's Ephesians 6 that says that we should put on the shield of faith to quench the what? The fiery darts of the devil. Now listen, if I'm sitting there and you're launching fiery darts at me, I'd want more than just a sheet of metal to hide behind. But that shield of faith protects you. Much like that leaf protected the babies in this nest. Listen, whatever it is that God asked you to do, don't look at the enemies in a way that says, can I take them? The question is this, is can they even stand against my Lord? Now you got to think, they've been in a battle before. Well, no, they haven't, brother. They went to the here, they went to the, they have. We preached about it last week. They were in that battle that nobody drew a sword. Nobody had to throw a single rock. They just kind of sat there while the Lord crushed the enemy with the sea. For all they knew, every battle they would ever be in, God would do the same. Now later on we'll see that that wasn't the case. They actually did have to learn how to fight and pick up swords and handle some business. But nonetheless, all they had to go off of was the Lord destroying one of the mightiest armies that had ever walked the earth at that time. It's just a very incredible thing that he just did. And now they're getting scared. They're sitting there stress eating some grapes, scared over this journey they were about to take. Listen, we need to realize, just like they did, that their conclusion, our conclusions for why we can't serve the Lord are wrong. They're wrong. You did all the math, you got an answer you thought was right, but it's the wrong answer. We need to make sure we are not analyzing the events in our lives. This is a quote, by the way, from a man named Tony Evans. We need to make sure we are not analyzing the events in our lives from a secular, human point, human worldly point of view, rather than from a divine, spiritual, godly point of view. Listen, from the grounds, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to flick my kids here for walking across the church. Brother, can you stand up? Now, this don't look like much of a fight, does it? It doesn't. From my point of view, this is a bad idea. Follow me on this? Whew, it's a long church. This looks a lot better to me. Right? Man, I could grab, I could throw it over here. He gets too close, I could wrap it that way for a little bit. Go ahead and sit down, brother. Thank you. We're looking at it from the wrong point of view. If I do this, I'll have to face this ridicule. God, who is sitting next to Jesus Christ, who was so ridiculed that they put holes in him, they beat him half to death, they said that they ripped out his hair, they put the crown of thorns on him, they put so much into him, and when they thought he was dead, instead of sitting there and gently shaking him or breaking his leg, they jabbed a spear right into his side, right? God, who is sitting next to him, is looking at you going, well, I don't want anyone to make fun of me. Perspective. Perspective. God, who sat there and formed everything, who's the maker of all creation, is sitting there listening to you whine about something he created as to whether or not we'd be able to pull through this thing. God knows what you're going through. He knew what you were going through when he told you to go through it. What we need to do is form the conclusion from God's perspective. What should be most troubling about the refusal to obey is that if they didn't go into the promised land, they had no plan B. Oh, I know you read through, well, we'll get a captain, we'll go back to Egypt. You could have died along the way. Were it not for the Lord giving you manna every morning, you would have died along the way. Were it not for the fiery cloud and the pillar, you never would have made it this far. So you think you could just have a captain and go back to captivity? And the Egyptians, who were still mourning the loss of a huge chunk of their army, and oh yeah, by the way, their king, would just be like, oh yeah, come on back, guys. We left your fires going for you. Come on back. They would have slaughtered them. Egypt would have been a joke as a nation if they didn't. That was not a plan B. Well, we'll just go find someplace else to go. Let's go do something else. There was no guarantee that they would be able to make any kind of civilization. Also, by the way, when so many people go, well, I think that it was just horrible that God asked them to go into the promised land and just unseat all of these people. You know what kind of people these were? These were ruthless people, right? You know what the law of the land was in this? It was to the victor goes the spoils. The mighty had the power. That's who it was. When they sat there and they saw how big, how entrenched, and how powerful these guys were, that wasn't just a made up thing. These Amalekites were huge people. They were big. Right? Goliath's people, the startings of them were in this land already. How did they get it? Well, by raping, pillaging, and killing everybody who was in there and anybody who would try to come in. They would go out and they would find small people like the Israelites. And again, that just kind of goes to prove to me why God grew Israel in Egypt, because it was safer for them there. And then when they're at a certain number, he was going to bring them out. When the time became fulfilled, he was bringing them out. Why? Because there's all of these traveling bands that wanted to go and kill all the men, bring all the women in, and do horrible things to the children. And that's who they were. So listen, when you see that, when you see what they had to go fight against, you still don't back down. They were terrified. There was every reason to be scared. Well, you thought, well, we'll just go start off somewhere else. Those people will come get you. What was it? There was a comedian. He joked like this, but it's a very true point. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Live by the river, die by the sword. Sword don't care. And that's the truth. Well, we can't go over to the promised land, they'll kill us. Well, if you go over there, they'll kill you. And if you go over there, they'll kill you. And if you go back to Egypt, they're really going to kill you. Right? And they're going to make sure everybody knows they killed you. It's going to be a very public spectacle. So this is it. This is your safest route. They saw the safest route and were still like, no, there's got to be some other way. You know what? I've seen that in churches too. Listen, here's the right answer. No, I can't give up my job. I can't give up my hobby. Listen, I'm doing really well in that bowling league. I can't walk away from it. I'm doing really well over at my mom's house where I'm building her a new house. I can't skip that to go to church. I have stuff I need to do. You're giving your life to things that do not matter. Again, I said that on Sunday. Your bowling trophy, your golf trophy, your whatever is just going to burn up. Lord, look at all the great things I did. Gone. I've even seen this. The pastor will sit there. He'll point to the Bible and say, "Thus saith the Lord." Yeah, but that's really just kind of your opinion. No. This book, this chapter, this verse. Yeah, but over at this church, it's not a big deal. So I don't understand what the big deal is. You look at reason, godly reason, and you go, "I can't do that." Folks, that is the height of disobedience. Making any kind of excuse, turning against from the Lord, is disobedience. But to sit there and not see the truth is a very scary kind. See, verse 31, they said, "But the men that went up with him said, 'We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.'" Verse 32, "And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, 'The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature.'" Now we see that was an evil report. Now evil report to me could mean one of two things. One, they were lying, which we've never seen a report come back as a lie, have we? I felt bad. Charlie, can I say that? I'm going to say this anyway, Charlie. We're over having prayer, and Brother Charlie brought up a point about the Johnson & Johnson vaccination. And I was, brother, this information, that information. I was wrong. And then I'm sitting there, I'm reading on the newspaper, and I found out how wrong. They pulled that bad boy off of the market. I was really wrong. Right? What causes that? Easily dismissal of things that we don't think ourselves. You follow me on that? Now that happens up here and it happens down here. Right? There are pastors, and I use that word lightly, that get up behind pulpits and they preach a false doctrine, a weak doctrine. They preach an apologetic doctrine. Not apologetics, but a doctrine that apologizes for itself. Well, we do believe this, but you know, you really can't think too much of it. You really don't want to. Now hold on. And then you get people in the pew that'll do the same thing. You know what, pastor, I hear you. You know what, preacher, I hear you. You know what, Sunday school teacher, I hear you. But man, I'm really in love with doing this thing. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to use all these reasons as to why I can't do that. And that's what the children of Israel did. They had all these reasons why they couldn't cross. The land itself just gobbles people up, and the people are so tall and giant. Now, again, it could mean that the report was false. It could also mean that there was negative in the wrong way. You know what? Maybe the land did gobble them up if you got too close to the edge, and maybe the people were tall. Neither one of those things are concerns as far as the Lord goes. Well, you have to understand what's going on there right now. You know, and I've been reading a little bit into the social justice movement, at least what it's been over the last couple of years. And I learned this, that I thought I knew what it was. I thought I knew what was motivating it, and I was wrong. And what I learned is this, is how it is when it's sneaking into churches, right? Now listen, here's the biblical stance, and I know it can frustrate certain conservatives, but here's that. The golden rule is this, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, right? When they asked Jesus, hey, what are the greatest of the commandments? What two did he give? Love the Lord, love your neighbor, right? Did he say what color he was? He did not. Hey, how about this one? When they asked the Lord, who is my neighbor? He used somebody of a different racial background to prove it to him. Somebody who the Jewish people would have been very offended at, right? The Samaritans. Right? So I'm just going to put that out there. And that's the truth behind it. But here's what they're doing with this. Well, no, it's not about salvation. It's about you apologizing for your privilege. Now, look into that. There's a really good book that I've got. It's called Fault Lines by Vadi Bakum. He's a popular preacher, not too strong on his doctrine, but I think he hits this home. And what he said was this, is that he, as a man who grew up in a broken black family, had grown up in a home of a single mom who did not make excuses, did not blame the poverty around. He grew up in poverty. And he grew up and he had to make choices. And he was growing up during that time when they were doing desegregation of schools. Right? That bloodbath. And he came through it. You know what he said? He said this. He says, what makes me sad is that they're victimizing us, saying that there's nothing you can do to get your own job, to get your own money, to take care of your family, to stop aborting our children. So we can't do any of these things. The government oppressed us, and this new government's the only thing that can set us free. And that by trying to seek freedom, we have to give it away. That's what the new social justice movement is, by the way. See, the problem isn't that there's the heart of the racist. The problem that they're talking about is that there's a system. We got to flush out all the churches. We got to burn down all the schools. We got to shut down all of the governments. And we've got to have a certain race of person rebuild it all back up. Now, what race is that going to be? Well, I tell you what, it's going to be the Democratic race is what it's going to be. No, look into it. Like, I know I sound crazy talking like this. Look into it. That's what they want. Listen, I've said this before. There's a reason why we keep putting abortion clinics in black neighborhoods. It's not because we don't need them in white neighborhoods. There's a reason why. The founder of Planned Parenthood was a practitioner of what you call eugenics, in the belief that you had to eliminate certain types of people to purify the world. And then she opened a bunch of her clinics in black neighborhoods and hired black doctors and encouraged them to promote and sell what they're selling there, because they knew that the people in the area would trust their doctor if they looked like them. Now, Margaret Sanger, she was a white person. The people who are pushing some of the things that you're seeing affecting churches today, why a lot of churches are, these bigger churches are split and falling apart, is because we no longer want to preach the gospel. We want to preach this social gospel where all the white people do is apologize and all the black people do are giving things. Nobody gave me enough. The LGBTQ crowd. Nobody gave me enough. I'll get this in churches sometimes too. The pastor never asked me enough. Excuse, excuse, excuse. Well, you know what, you white people, they just give you things. You know what, you people who are good in church, who have been in church for a long time, people just give you things. Nobody ever gave me anything. Now, I take that back. Now listen, we take care of each other, don't we? But it's not because of how I look. It's not. We had a friend growing up. It was Danielle's brother's friend. He grew up. He was the only African-American kid. When I say African-American, I mean that his dad was American. His mother was African. Right? Only African-American kid in his school. A predominantly rural school, aggregate school. Nobody gave him anything. They gave him a hard time. He would talk about it. He would talk about some of the things that people would say to him. He would talk about some of the ways some of the teachers would treat him. You know what? He's probably one of the more successful people I know right now. You wonder why? Because he didn't take it. He didn't sit there and go, well, you know what? Because they're mean to me, somebody's got to give me something. So, well, brother, thank you for that, that little approach there into social justice, but it doesn't have anything to do with excuses and me. Because we do the same thing. Why? Because it's of the devil. Sit there until somebody gives you enough. Sit there. Well, nobody invited me to the meeting. I hope I've never been guilty of not making things open as far as getting information out to people. Well, I don't feel like I'm a part of that church anymore. I hope that's not the case. I used to do that when I was a kid. All these people would get over, they'd get over to somebody's house. I didn't get invited. I'd go over to that friend and say, hey, listen, you didn't invite me over to your house, and that really bothered me. He goes, well, I said it in the back of the church as loud as I possibly could, so if you didn't hear, you're probably in the bathroom. That's your fault. But I laugh about that, but that's the flesh, isn't it? You left me out! Nobody told me I had to! Right? No, nobody said that was required! Nobody! Stop waiting to be given things you already have. Grab a hold of it and do something with it. Right? They had everything they needed. We have everything we need. I heard somebody told me one time, well, I don't go to church because that pastor, he never talks to me. Well, I loved my pastor growing up. I did. I loved my pastor. I never went to church because I was hoping he'd talk to me. Right? Now, if I wanted to talk to him or I was hoping we'd get to talk today, I'd go talk to him. You know what? Whether he was busy or not. Hey! You know, and I never know. Well, if he's not going to talk to me, I'm not going to go to the church. This person did this one time. They would sit in the back, right by where, right exactly where Mike's still sitting. Just kidding. Church would end, they'd get up and they'd hop out. That pastor never talked to me. Now, my pastor was never fit enough to sprint to the back of the church before you got out to your car. How do you expect that to happen? Right? Usain Bolt couldn't have beat you to the car, man. Just stop. Right? We come up with our excuses. I can't because nobody gave me and nobody does. What about yours? Can I ask you this? Is it my responsibility to edify the brethren and sistern in this church? Yes, it is. Can I ask you a question? Is it everybody's responsibility? Yeah. My responsibility to encourage the members of this church is not because I am the pastor. It is because I am a church member. Isn't that true? Because I'm a church member. Now, am I supposed to go and be a soul winner because I am the pastor? No. Because I'm a church member. I was talking to Brother Mike. I didn't put my tithe in the box. I was telling him, hey, we're out of checks. I'll get the tithe to you. You know what? I heard somebody make the excuse. I was talking to the accountant. The accountant goes, well, now listen. He goes, it's a little weird that, you know, you pay tithes. Because the money comes from the church, you're just giving it back to the church. You go, yeah, well, as a pastor, that makes sense, but as a church member, I need to tithe. The end. To me, that's as far as it goes. Well, theologically, you know what? That's as deep as I'm willing to get into it. Because I can never find a good reason to not give to the Lord. That's it. That's it. As a church member, that's my responsibility. Well, nobody edifies you. Well, why don't you go edify somebody else and see what happens? Go encourage somebody, see what they do. I found this. There was a lady in our church in Flat Rock. If you miss church, if you deem fit to get too sick to come to church, this lady would send you a message telling you she loved you, she was praying for you, and she hoped you got better. You know what? She kept doing that to me and doing that to me and doing that to me. You know what I thought? I go, nobody ever does that to me. Nobody ever writes on my Facebook, hey, sorry you're sick, just her. She got sick one day. She had some health issues. She got sick. And that was when I was more active on Facebook. I looked over at her page. There were 7 or 8 people all said it. Now, why does she get 7 or 8 people to say, hey, we love you, we miss you, and we're praying for you? Because those were the seeds she sowed. Because when I saw that she was missing, I go, oh, no! I get to do this now! And it didn't dawn on me for another couple months. Why? And that I should be that person, no matter where I go and what I do, to show that love. Well, I've got this excuse for not giving the gospel. There's no excuse. Aren't you glad somebody gave it to you? Yeah, but brother, the doctrine of election, you know what? You sit on that doctrine of election for too long and you're going to wear into it. All right? What you need to do is do what the Great Commission says and go ye therefore and teach all nations. Right? The doctrine of election is there to tell you how the Lord saves, so we can give him the full glory for salvation when it happens. It is not there to dictate to you how you should go, how often you should go, right? That was settled when Jesus Christ said, go ye therefore and teach all nations. And when he, oh yeah, by the way, sent an angel down when they're all staring up to get him to that work. We have everything we need for that, right? We have everything. The only reason we would make excuses is because we don't want to. Right? Our reasoning will cause excuses. Our closed ears will cause excuses. Verse 8 in our text, Moses is telling them, God said he would bless. God said this would happen, that they would be fine. All we got to do is go. And they wouldn't listen. Caleb and Joshua, who were in the land, said, no, this is it. I've seen people do that. Well, I went to go talk to the pastor, and the pastor didn't give me the answer I wanted. They didn't say it like that, but that's the abbreviated version. He didn't give me the answer I wanted. Well, what about two or three of your friends who have had the same exact issue? They followed the same exact scripture, and they got an amazing result out of it. Well, of course they're going to agree. Yeah. Hey, they go, hey, by the way, my kitchen's on fire, right? It's coming from the grease pan that I was just cooking bacon with. I'm going to put some water on it. Brother Wade goes, well, don't put water on it. That's a bad idea. Put flour on it. I don't know how you handle a grease fire. I put flour on it. Not that I have a lot of grease fires. I'm a good cook. But don't put water on it. Well, you know what? Brother Wade's not a firefighter. What does he know? I'm going to call somebody else. Are you going to call a firefighter? No. I'm going to call someone and wait for them to tell me what I want to hear. No. God said this is what's going to happen. Moses pointed it out. The people who saw the land said, yes, it is scary, but not as scary as who we're bringing into the battle. Right? These people can't take God. And Caleb and Joshua, they were so adamant and so upset, they even mourned, grieved. I got all upset when the children of Israel started to lose their minds. Why? Because man's reasoning almost always develops its own conclusion. It always comes to its own end. And I talk about humanism a lot, and that's going to be one of our Sunday school classes one time. We talk about what humanism is. Humanism is the idea that man in and of himself has the solutions to his own problems. So if you think it, you can make it happen, and it's fine. And that has led us to the mess we're in today. Because people come across the hard times, they don't have the solution within themselves, and they develop depression, anxiety, and sadness. When you use your own reasoning instead of God's, that's humanism. And it always leads to being sitting there by the promised land, too scared to go into it. Because you've got a pile of excuses sitting in the way. And I'll tell you this, in closing, excuses, they come at a cost. The things that we're often afraid of, in running from them, we often get in trouble with it. Selma Elmore, have you ever heard of her? Probably not. But Selma Elmore's conscience must have been bothering her, because in October 2010, the 44-year-old woman flagged down a police officer in Lockland, Ohio, to ask if there was a warrant out for her arrest. After the officer informed her that indeed there was, she ran. You know what gets me about this story? The reason why she had a warrant out for her arrest was she owed a traffic fine. She could have gone to the police station with the police officer, paid the fine, they would have dismissed her case and let her out. The penalty from fleeing from arrest or resisting arrest, much bigger problem. Always jail time with that one, depending on the mood of the cop. You make them run, you're going to have some jail time go along with it. And it's not going to be a comfortable ride in there. She was so terrified of a thing, she was willing to throw caution to the wind to expose the thing she was doing, and then caused more trouble trying to get out of it. What would be the right thing to do? To go to the police, pay the fine, go home, never have to think about it again. What did it cost the Israelites when they refused to go into the promised land? As 40 years of walking, 40 years of watching their tail, 40 years of trying to scratch a living out of the wilderness, 40 years of, well, if we had just. As they're sitting there walking through, their feet all blistered, setting up the tent for the 1,000,000,000th time, they sat there and said, well, if we would have just gone over, we would have had a house by now. Could you imagine that, walking through the wilderness? All right, it's been 5 years. I could have had a house built. You know, it's been 10 years. Little Tommy, he could have been married and building his own house by now. Think about that. Oh, what it cost me to make excuses. It cost another thing. Look at verse 24 with me. The place was called the Brook of... Sorry, am I on the right? Sorry, chapter 14, verse 24. My apologies. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. All right? You didn't want to do Sunday school? You didn't want to teach the kids? Well, here's a generation that knows nothing in the church. Didn't that happen in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, even into the 90s among our kind of Baptist churches? We didn't want to educate. Now again, I understand why a lot of churches stood off from it, because there are people out there with bounce houses for Sunday schools. I'm on that. I understand. But to sit there and teach them nothing is bothersome. All right? Well, how about these people, these brand new Christians that have been saved in the last 10 years? Do we have anything to teach them the main basics of doctrine? I put my microphone over here. Do we have anything to teach them the main basics of doctrine? No, we've got Sunday morning service. But anything to teach them to answer questions? No. All right, well, here's the next generation. There you go. Right? We sit here and we don't want to give the gospel. We don't participate in things. What's going to happen when it's time for some of these young people to start running this church? Will they know how to teach? Will they know how to... Brother Mark's got a set on this. Will they know how to run a sound system? Right? Dennis, you plan on living forever? I don't want to. What are we going to do? Right? If somebody were to come in and we were to baptize them and I bring them forward to the church and here's a brand new member, who's going to be able to answer the what's next question? Well, throw them into the church. They'll be fine. That's like throwing a kid in an AP class who just started high school. Here you go. That's intimidating for an adult. I don't know about you, but the older I get, the harder I learn. I have to work harder at it. Same for you? So how would I sit there if somebody's 50 years old, I just baptized them, how am I going to acclimate them to what we're doing? We need to teach them. We take them aside, maybe one of the men, one of the ladies, take them aside, and that's your Sunday school class, it's a discipleship class, we're going to teach you. Right? How about us that have been here for a while, right? If I were to ask you a very scary question, what was the last time you learned something new? Don't answer that question because I'm your pastor, it'll break my heart. No, that's a serious question. When was the last time you learned something new? If we fail in that, they have to pay the price. They have to pay you back there, you have to pay the price. Lord, save some of these kids. The Lord tarries is coming for another 20, 30 years. All of our mistakes go to them. If I'm not the pastor I'm supposed to be, that's somebody else's problem, isn't it? If I sacrifice my service to the Lord, to the God of excuses, not only do I have to pay for it, but somebody else has to dig the church out of it later, right? Again, that's why there's all that sweating and crying over there in the office at the house. I'll go on walks and I'll get all tore up about something. I did this, Glenda. I told Danielle I came home, I was limping. And I go, sweetheart, I think I hurt my knee again. She goes, well, what'd you do now? So I was out there and I was listening to a sermon and I was thinking about what I was going to preach next week and I was getting some notes, I was getting some thoughts together and I got so excited, I started jogging. Yeah. It wasn't until it started hurting that I realized I was doing it. Now, how long I was doing it? Probably 3 or 4 steps. But I have to get tore up about stuff. Folks, you have to get tore up about stuff. And not just in these walls. You got to be at home with your Bible open getting tore up. You got to be sitting there praying getting tore up. Not just about the things that make you sad, but the things that get you excited. You got to get excited about the Lord. And you know what? You don't have to teach new Christians that. They'll sit there, they'll watch you, and then they'll get to reading, they'll get to studying, they'll get to praying, they'll get to praising the Lord's name, and all of a sudden they're going to be jogging unnecessarily. And that's what we want to see. The problem is that we refuse to study, we refuse to read, we refuse to pray, we refuse to participate in things, and then we wonder why we feel dead inside. We wonder why we turn after generation and there's nobody standing anymore. We wonder why we're the ones sitting there going, well, we used to. My pastor used to do that. He'd talk about some of the men in our church that would probably in their 60s and 70s, you guys know what I'm talking about, show up at a church. That wasn't a joke, by the way. That was to your honor. 60s and 70s would show up to do work, and they were the most skillful and most intelligent people. There was one guy who did some funny things, but he still got the job done. We'll just put it that way. And he would talk about how in those times, those men would just show up. They would see things, they would just show up and do things. And we didn't have that at the time. Pastor would always have to sit there and say, hey, we need this done at this time. I'm going to buy the parts. I'm going to buy the materials. We need this many people in. Okay, no, I've got 3. I need 2 more. And it was always a deal. It was always a big thing. And when I say that to your benefit is I'll show up and there's just things getting done. And part of me says, well, I should probably have them tell me they're going to do it. But you know what? If I see you, I know you're going to do it. But I thought about that. Well, we used to have men that would do that. You know how many of us men sat in men's meetings and in men's fellowship sat there and go, wow, those were good times, weren't they, Pastor? Those were good times. Completely missed on us that there was a room full of men that could have been those men. Hey, can I ask you, how many of you, there are ladies, like we just talked about Sister Johnson passed away. How many of you know ladies in the church, you know ladies who are of the most highest spirituality, that were the strongest, that knew how to do great things and led ladies to do amazing things, and they were great spiritual blessings to you. They're great encouragements and maybe even counselors to you, right? Think about those ladies. You can do that. About some of the godly men we were talking about the conference. There's a young man I've been watching. Brother Mike met my friend. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but Ken Glish is what I call him. 22, 23 years old. Cute little thing. He probably weighs as much as Xander does, if that. Got a beautiful wife, beautiful family. They're just adorable. But to hear this kid, and I say the word kid loosely because that offends me too, but to hear him preach and to teach, I've heard him teach, Brother Mike's heard him preach, he thunders. Why? Because it's not him. I know he's had great teachers, but it wasn't his teachers that put that in him. He uses the same formula that you and I can. I told Brother Michael, people used to say that about me, wisdom beyond their years. You know how why a young person can get wisdom beyond their years? It's not the young person, it's not who taught them. It's because they're basing their education off of a book that's wise behind their years. You following me on that? So men, what's the difference between you and Ken Glish? Other than 40 years or so. Again, not a joke, but what's the difference? Nothing. Nothing at all. There are no excuses to stop you and me. Well, I'm not as smart. Paul was not all that smart. Peter was not all that smart. And we're still talking about him. Right? Peter was, if anybody had any reason to doubt that somebody was of grand intelligence, it was early ministry Peter. But you look at late ministry Peter, and he was quite impressive. Right? He got to be there. Oftentimes, when there was just a handful of disciples in the room that got to be somewhere, Peter was one of them. Why? Because of the heart. All you need is a submissive heart and a mind that's willing to figure out anything that comes your way. The Lord will handle the rest. He'll give you the wisdom you need. He'll give him the strength you need. He'll give you the patience and the knowledge that you need to have. All you need is an open mind and an open Bible and an open heart, and you're good to go. The Lord will handle the rest. So if you find yourself ready to make an excuse for your sin, for your study, for your lifestyle, for your service, whatever, you stop and you remember the cost of using an excuse. And you remember the God that could wipe that excuse away if you only vowed to cross into the promised land. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I apologize for taking these folks' time so